Hurt my feelings.
Welcome to the Palm Coast City Council. We're meeting in the Palm Coast Community Center on Clubhouse Drive. Please join with me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States of America.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mayor Nancy Hughes, Vice Mayor McGuire.
Here.
Councilmember DiLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Nobile.
Here.
And Councilmember Shipley is excused.
Thank you. Agenda item number one, approval of the minutes of the City Council's meetings of September 15, 23, 29, and a 29 special meeting.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Agenda item number two, a presentation of the 2015 annual intercoastal waterway cleanup results.
Mayor, City Council, our team leader in this little annual program is Denise Bevan, and she's going to tell the story.
Thank you, Mr. Landon. Good evening, City Council.
Evening.
So a little over a month ago, we had our 8th annual intercoastal waterway cleanup. What will you find on September 5th? And we always like to put forward our event objectives. Reduce pollution in city waterways and beyond, that's fairly obvious. But we really want to focus on volunteer safety and convenience and make it fun for them. And the way that we try to achieve that is to recruit sponsorships and expand our program in unique ways. So reducing pollution. We have 26 miles of saltwater canals and 2 miles of intercoastal waterway. That's our core target area. We try to expand awareness about our waterways and how to keep them clean through our volunteers and the participation through this event. And it's actually coordinated in September for a unique reason. The whole world cleans up at the end of September. So we try to stagger our event and make sure that we continue that message here in Palm Coast. Safety, safety, safety. We know our volunteers are eager and they want to get out there in unique places, but at foremost, we try to give them guidance on what to do and what not to do. And we do that by guidelines for litter removal in their cleanup kit. Now, the cleanup kit is basically an item that includes not only the safety form, but garbage bags, gloves. They also get t-shirt and water bottles and other items so they can hit the road running per se on event day. And we do that through event orientation, also giving them additional guidance. We do that the Saturday before. Volunteers love that because they get all their supplies early and they can get out into the environment early on event day. Staff assists volunteers during the event. We patrol cleanup locations through gator carts. We have public works staff that actually put coolers on the back of the gator carts. We give the volunteers a reusable bottle, so we try to keep them hydrated out in the environment when they're trying to clean up trash and make a difference. Since 2013, we've done something unique, and we've offered a mascot each year. And so in 2013, we said the manatee was our mascot, and this is Captain Humanity. In 2014, we offered a filler crab as a mascot. And the reason I mention these mascots is because we do a campaign through social media every year, and this year, our mascot was the pelican. And how did we accommodate getting a name for our lucky mascot? So we went out to Facebook and we said, Facebookers, what would you like our mascot's name to be? Because it's pretty important. So some of the contributions our Facebook friends said was, one of them was HOPE. And that's pretty cool, but it actually is an acronym. It's Helping Our Planet Earth. Very neat. Palmer, Roddy Recycle, Pick Up Pots, Scoop, Sir Pick Up A Lot. My personal favorite is Philip the Bag. It took me a second to get that one, by the way. Mm-hmm. And Pelican. Overall, we had 130 entries through Facebook. That completely eclipsed last year. 176 votes. The winner won by a landslide, 41 votes. So our honorary mascot this year is Scoop. Scoop the Pelican. And we recognize the winners through social media and actually gave them prizes if they wanted to actually honor their winning name. So Scoop went on to actually inspire some other really cool things with the event. Knowing that we had a pelican for our mascot, we actually targeted some local businesses. And through this very loving Scoop the Mascot, we actually doubled our sponsorships this year. We had, of course, our ongoing grant support from Florida Inland Navigation District of $5,000. Ripple Effect Eco Tours provided us a gift certificate. Greenland Dolphin Adventure also gave us gift certificates. Tropical Kayaks at Palm Coast Resort continues to support us. Funky Pelican. So when I approached Funky Pelican, they liked the idea. So they gave us $200 of gift cards, which was very generous. Klein Construction gave us $250, Publix a $100 gift card, and really, really good special on hot dogs. Waste Pro provided dumpsters at no cost. We actually had private contributions from families and prizes. Not Family gave us $50. Home Depot gave us numerous prizes. That was a big door prize, and we'll share that here in just a minute. Stone Engineering, $100, and Pelican Pete. Pelican Pete is a series of children's books, and I know personally because I got my brother one when his son was born, my nephew, and it educates about the environment. So I went out and I talked to the author, and I said, would you like to give some prizes or something like that? And it actually evolved into a really cool partnership. So the Pelican Pete Special Edition, we actually have it shown here on the screen. We use that as prizes, but when I was talking to the author, she says, what about a special edition? You know, I work with you, and Pelican Pete Printing for Flight is perfect because it's about Pelican Pete keeping clean and keeping his home clean in the ocean. And so what we actually evolved was something really neat with having an acknowledgement page within the Pelican Pete Special Edition. And we respect our Arbor Day, our Tree City USA designation, our Arbor Day celebration, our Children Helping and Resource Protection, 3,400 students that participated in that. And ultimately, we want to say a really unique thank you to Florida Inland Navigation District. They've contributed $40,000 in grant funding to this project to date. And so we actually, as part of our acknowledgement to this, I sent that to FIND so they would know that through their commissioners how much we appreciate them. And to show appreciation for our council members, the author actually autographed unique copies for each one of you to show that how much they appreciate you supporting this as well. So you actually have a copy for you tonight to take home. So let's get back to the event. These are our volunteers that tackle by land. Now, I don't know if you can tell, but in this bottom right-hand corner, this gentleman is on the shoreline, and you see across here, but it is raining hard. And one unique thing for this year, we had bad weather. But our volunteers were out there nevertheless making a difference on land and by water. And you can even see how dedicated they are. She's got a poncho on. So with the volunteers, we believe they made a huge difference. This graph is kind of busy, but it's a graph that shows all of our years. 2008 on this end, this year's event on the other end. This year we had 536 volunteers. That went up from last year. Amount of recycled material collected, 812 pounds. 1,064 pounds of regular garbage. We give them a different garbage bags, clip, recyclable comparatively to regular garbage so we can keep as much out of landfill as possible. And our total pounds were a little under a ton, 1,876 pounds. From all events, 8.7 tons of garbage taken out of the environment. Now, one of the really fun parts of this event that we've carried on throughout the years is our most unique find. So when the volunteers are out there, they find some pretty crazy stuff. And so we ask them to bring back one crazy item. And they come back to the event headquarters, which is at the community center, and they bring back this one item. And our Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission law enforcement officers have committed every year to come and being our honorary judges. And that's a tough job. They get lobbied. You know, they get told mine's more special than my neighbor's over here. And some of the items really are shocking that you find out. One aquarium, maybe bike and car tires are pretty normal. AC unit cover, car keys, vehicle fender cleats, ongoing, a campaign sign. They found that, weed eater park, fencing, oyster-covered sandals. So as part of trying to keep this exciting, some of the prizes that we got from our sponsors went to the most unique find and the winner of that. But everybody really is a winner. So how do our volunteers win? So they come back with a results form, and they in turn get a card, basically a raffle ticket. And by getting the event results to us, they get into the running of door prizes. So what you see here is outdoor lanterns, citronella candles that was donated by Home Depot. And so we gave those away. Here's a lucky winner. He can barely carry it, but he won it. Here's a winner of one of the special edition Pelican Pete books. They also gave us books on CD, so that was included. And here's one of our special winners for our Marineland Behind the Scenes tour. So many, many prizes were given out, but ultimately the big winner is the most unique find winner. FWC law enforcement officers elected the oyster-covered sandal as being the winner this year. And we have a strong presence from our Boy Scout and Girl Scout troops. One of our Boy Scout troops, 472, actually brought in 400 pounds just himself. So this is one of those events that these volunteers look forward to every year, and they're really anxious to do this every year. Even though our numbers fluctuate, there's still an excellent presence. And this is just one of those things that really reflect on the community's investment, not only to the environment, but participating in something special. And with that, I'm open to any questions. This is actually a poster. When the volunteers came back, they all signed. And this was turned into a photograph that I sent to all of our sponsors so they know how much our volunteers appreciate them as well. And with that,
questions, council questions?
Yes, sir.
Take your trash and go home. And keep up the good work.
Thank you, council members.
Thank you.
Agenda item number three, ordinances, resolutions, and public hearings. An ordinance of 2015, Roberts Road West Annexation, second reading. I believe that goes over to our esteemed attorney.
It goes over to me, anyway.
Well, you'll have to do.
This is an ordinance of the City Council of St. Paul Coast, Florida, annexing 12 parcels of real property containing 196.07 gross acres, more or less, and generally located east of Colbert Lane and southwest of Roberts Road, more particularly and legally described on Exhibits A and B attached to the ordinance, and fully incorporated herein by this reference, providing for the amendment of the city boundaries to incorporate the real property into the city boundaries, providing for repeal of prior inconsistent ordinances, resolutions, and severability and effective date.
Council questions, comments? Open the meeting to the public. Anybody wish to comment on this second reading of this ordinance? Okay, come back to council for a more additional comments or a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Ordinance for Roberts Road West Annexation.
And second.
Motion has been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. And opposed? Motion carries. Agenda item number four, resolution approving a partial plat vacation owners, First African Methodist Episcopal Church. We have a presentation from the indefatigable Constance Bentley.
Mayor, Council, this is a quasi-judicial matter, so if there's been any ex-party communications on this matter prior to tonight's hearing, if those to be disclosed at this time, let the record reflect there's been no ex-party communications. Thank you.
Nothing from Mr. Nobile or myself?
Nothing.
Thank you very much, Council.
Accomplish.
Good evening, Council members.
Good evening.
This evening, I'll be presenting a partial plat vacation for the Old Kings Road Professional Park North plat. The applicant is the First African Methodist Episcopal Church, AME Church, it's often referred to. It is situated between I-95 and Old Kings Road. It's north of Palm Coast, and it's south of Frontier Drive. It's also south of another church, the United Evangelical and Missionary Outreach of Palm Coast. Its future land use is mixed use, and the zoning is commercial, general commercial too.
And mixed use means what?
Mixed use is the future land use, which is the larger umbrella for commercial type uses.
Okay.
This is the plat that we are referring to, partially vacating. It is an antiquated plat recorded in 1990. There are 24 lots, with each lot approximately having a 75-foot width. They are proposing to vacate lots 1 through 21 and lots 22, 23, and 24 will remain platted. The property is vacant between lots 1 and 17, and the First AME Church and their community hall or school is located on lots 18 through 21, but they own the property in its entirety. When vacating the plat, essentially what you do is omit the lot lines, interior lot lines, and you're left with the boundary and a large piece of property. It becomes an unplatted piece of land. Also, with vacating a plat, you may also vacate certain easements in that process. Now, easements that are created by a separate document prior to the plat, in some cases after, are not vacated in this process. They remain. So, for example, there is a Florida Power and Light easement on the property that will remain even after the vacation of this plat. However, there are some easements that are created by the plat itself that will become vacated in this process. In order to keep those easements, if it's desired to keep them, you would have to provide a separate document to execute and record to maintain those easements. On this plat, we do have an easement that we'd like to retain. That's a 10-foot drainage and utility easement abutting the roadway and fronting all the lots. The 10-foot utility and drainage easement consists of utility infrastructure and swale and drainage facilities. So the city would like to maintain that easement. Also, with that said, I would like to make note to correct my report, which just indicates utility easement, that we indeed are drawing up an agreement for a drainage and utility easement to replace this easement that was on the plat.
Excuse me, Constance. Can we go back a step? So to understand, right now there's 21 individual easements, 10-foot drainage easements in place now, and this will make one big long one along the whole piece of property. Is that correct?
No. What you have is 21 lots, and all 21 lots are covered by one 10-foot drainage utility and drainage easement.
Right. Okay.
So the recommendation is to adopt a resolution for the partial plat vacation for lots 1 through 21 of the Old Kings Road Professional Park North Subdivision for the First African Methodist Episcopal Church, with the condition to execute, and I underline and highlighted my correction, for a drainage and utility easement agreement and record with the Flagler County Clerk of the Circuit Court.
Council, questions?
Yes, Chair, I have another question. Constance, are we going to need additional right-of-way, road right-of-way on the west side of Old Kings Road for the future four-laning of it?
If we do need additional right-of-way and things of that nature, it would have no bearing on whether or not this plat was vacated or not. You would still need it and have to acquire it from the property owner.
We've talked to our engineers about this, and we don't anticipate needing right-of-way at this location. Constance is correct. It's really not a factor with the vacation because they are not proposing development. When they come in for some type of development, if it's going to need a right turn lane or something, then, of course, you can require that. But in this case, it's not relevant. But to answer your question, we don't anticipate needing the right-of-way. We do need the drainage and utility easement, though, because we have a utility line, I think a water line, and there is a ditch running along the street. So those are already being utilized, and we need to continue that.
Okay. No further questions for me.
Constance, what's going to happen on the lots that are not going to be built on? What's that usage going to be? They're just going to be vacant lots?
Well, once you vacate the plat, the lots no longer exist. It will be one piece of property with the church building on there. Should they choose to build accessory structures, they would have to follow the requirements of the Land Development Code and go through a site plan review, just as any other development would do. But it would be considered one lot instead of 21 lots.
What about parking? Are they going to use that property for parking? Are they going to put a paved parking lot in there?
They have not suggested that type of use. We've heard that there's a possibility of a columbarium or some type of use like that. But again, whatever use they propose on that lot, they would have to follow our land development code and go through the criteria for a site plan process.
So we're considering a columbarium for that property? We're going to put human remains in that property?
That is a use that they had been discussing, but they have not brought it forward or provided an application for that use.
Okay, thank you.
And, Council, the action tonight is just when you look at a plat, that's just a method for subdividing land.
Okay.
And so all they're doing tonight is unsubdividing land. They're making it back into, if you will, pardon my improper use of grammar, they're putting it back into one parcel. That's all they're doing tonight, other than they're going to be giving us a drainage and utility easement, because as I'm sure all of you can see, the document that's in the agenda packet is just a utility easement. So we'll be getting with them to make sure that document is modified and re-executed to include the drainage easement necessary for our little drainage facility.
Any other council questions?
One question. Constance, could you go back about three slides? Yeah, right there. 18 to 21 are separate lots right now.
Those lots have the church structure on there, and because we can only bind four lots and no more, those four were bound together for that structure. And in order for them to continue building, they would need to utilize the additional lot.
Okay, but those four are already considered
bound.
Bound, okay.
Yes.
All right. I was confused. I was like, how'd they get the building on there if they were? And now we're just talking about really 1 to 17 today?
No, we're talking about 1 to 21. So that entire property is one lot.
The 17 lots and the one, and combine them together.
Once you vacate the plat, they will all be together.
The whole
as one entire
one
piece of property.
Further questions? Open up the meeting to the public. Anybody wish to be heard on agenda item number 4? God, we got to beat them back tonight. Come back to council. Further questions, comments, or a motion?
move approval of agenda item number 4, a resolution approving partial plat vacation for owners First American Methodist Episcopal Church.
Second. Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Agenda item number 5, a resolution approving the binding lot agreement for application BLCOM 1525 to bind lots 25, 26, and 27 of section 59, block 32, map of Seminole Park.
It's our night for making smaller lots into larger lots. Constance is handling this one too.
I am presenting a binding lot agreement application by Mr. and Mrs. Schlieper, who are in our audience this evening. And the property is 23 Seafaring Path, and it is located on the west side of Seafaring Path between north and south extents of Seafront Trail. And from it's a little hard to see from the location map, but the residence is in the center lot, and the two lots on the outside are vacant. And what they're proposing to do is to combine all three lots into one lot. According to the Land Development Code, city staff can administratively bind two lots, but in order to bind three lots or four lots, it would require council approval. The future land use map is residential designation, and it is zoned single family residential 3 for all three lots. And staff recommendation is to adopt the resolution approving the application for the binding lot combination 1525 to bind lots 25, 26, and 27 of section 59, block 32, map of Seminole Park.
Council questions?
Just one. Why are the numbers not matching here?
Those are the address numbers that the property appraiser uses, and these are lot
here.
Numbers.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Does the binding of these three lots, will that give the ability to change the type of or the additional construction in that area at all? How would that affect what can be put on that land as far as structures?
The way it affects the land is that it becomes one lot for that single family residence.
Okay. Have been all codes?
They would have to abide by the Land Development Code, and they would be allowed to have accessory structure like a fence, a shed, but it would be treated like one single lot.
Okay.
So it actually
in your opinion, I know you're not the property appraiser, but will this action increase the value of the property in that neighborhood or not? Or maybe?
Well, what it does is it takes the three lots with the potential of three homes and makes it into one lot with the potential of only one home. So ultimately, obviously, if you had three houses, you're going to have higher value than if you have one house.
You're going to have higher tax value.
Well,
because the value doesn't change. They only look at house sales for the value.
Total value. One house is going to be less value than three houses. Yeah. But
my question is more directed. I live across the street. They have this now, and they built a big house. That's probably going to increase my property value.
The neighbors will find that, you know, having one lot that they're taking care of with one probably larger house and larger yard is actually a plus for the neighborhood, if that's what you're looking for.
Any other council questions?
Nope.
Open the meeting to the public. Anybody wish to be heard on agenda item number 5, a resolution doing all this stuff?
Jack Carroll, Bob Cox. I didn't quite understand. How does this affect the tax on that? Are they going to pay taxes on the one house, or are the three lots combined make it just one tax base.
We'll get you an answer, Jack. Any other member of the public wish to be heard? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion, come back to council. Who wants to address the Mr. Reichman?
Well, right now, my assumption is that they're receiving three separate tax bills. One tax bill would be larger than the other two because the one tax bill, which has a house on it, has a higher property value. And then I would assume that the other two tax bills are for undeveloped lots. What will happen is if this passes tonight, this will be recorded. This action will be recorded, and the property appraiser will be advised of this, and the property appraiser will be obligated to revalue three lots into one lot, and then based upon that new value, reassess. And instead of receiving three tax bills, they'll receive one. Now, I can't speculate on how that would change, but it's essentially instead of three, they're going to get one. Whether it's the exact same total amount or not, I can't answer that, Mr. Carroll.
Okay, come back to council for excuse me, questions, comments, or a motion.
Move approval of agenda item number 5, a resolution approving the binding lot agreement for application BL-COM-15-25 to bind lots 25, 26, and 27 of section 59, block 32, map of Seminole Park.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That moves us to the consent agenda. We have, one, two, three. There are four items on the consent agenda. Does any citizen wish to have an item removed for discussion?
Number 9,
okay. Does any council member wish to remove anything for discussion?
No, thank you.
All right. Agenda number 9.
We have to approve the consent.
A resolution approving additional expenses related to the PA1 replacement project.
Bill, we got to approve the consent agenda, the remaining items.
I'm sorry. Before we get there, I'm a point of procedure here. I need a motion to approve the consent agenda except item number 9.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now we can come back to agenda number 9. Who wants to talk about putting in extra expenses for the weir?
Well, this is a project that was done under emergency conditions, and we found unexpected conditions, so the cost went up, and it's is authorized. The agenda item is requesting the total price of the project be approved, and the total price of the project now is approximately $104,000 more than expected. But other than that, be whatever Mr. Carroll, if he has any questions.
I called this guy. I just want to know what's the PA1.
That's the designation for the weir that was put in at Pine Lakes and Belterre. There was a cost overrun, Jack, and the agenda is asking for the council to approve paying the cost overrun.
Okay.
Satisfied?
That's it.
Okay.
You have to go through all this.
Well,
we talked about it at great length in the workshop, but that's okay. That's what we're here for. All right. Agenda item number 9 of the consent agenda. Further council questions?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Based on the contract, if I were to go and read the contract, would it be clear that this additional work is outside the scope of the contract?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Explain to me how. I mean, just briefly. Don't give me the whole, you know, if you can just tell me how it would be determined that this is outside the scope of the contract.
Well, it exceeded the amount of spoil and such that was taken out of.
Okay,
the area.
That's defined.
Right.
And we hit that number, and
anything above that's extra.
Gotcha. Okay.
Plus the fact that we thought there's only maybe one or two structures underneath that concrete.
Right, right.
And end up be three or four.
Right. I'm just concerned. My only concern was, and I think I asked this last week, but it was that we're not allowing someone to define, well, this is more than we anticipated, so we need more money. And if we let that go, obviously, you know, it's an issue.
But, no, sir, we kind of estimate how much material is there.
And because it's underground, like under the water like that, sometimes you miss.
Right. And any quantities like that, we ask for a per cubic yard price for anything exceeding that amount.
Okay. But the statement was made at the last workshop. I don't remember who made it, but it was the other bids were so much higher because they anticipate that. And I was a little, I don't think somebody would do that, right? Because it's not an anticipated, you wouldn't bid for what might happen if it's clearly defined in the contract, this is all you're moving here.
Well, it's kind of similar to Lehigh Canal, spoil removal, where one contractor can probably remove it a lot cheaper than another contractor.
Yeah. But it's nothing to do with anticipating possible overcosts that would run against them.
Well, you cannot tell. Because the first time this river was built, the contractor just threw a wild ass... Excuse me. a wild figure out there figuring it, but, you know, I may not get the bid. And he was the only bidder.
Oh, okay.
So he got the contract. And he made all kinds of money on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, but it's irrelevant to the point where it's a defined contract. And in this sense, there wasn't a wag.
Right.
We
try to anticipate any overages.
Yeah, you do.
Things that can't be measured.
And you put it in the contract to help.
With a contingency.
Right, and a contingency. Okay, I'm good.
And there's a lot of...
Sorry. Yeah.
And there's a lot of history. Klein Construction actually has done many of these for us. So they have a better knowledge of what these things cost, and they can anticipate some of these things. And when somebody's coming in new and has never done one, there's the tendency to go a little higher for these anticipated costs.
Sure. Well, the other thing, Don, that needs to be mentioned here is that timing was of the essence here. We had an emergency situation. And rather than invest a lot of engineering time and consultations and meetings and stuff, we had to go ahead and get something done because it constituted an emergency with our stormwater department.
Absolutely. And generally when we build these structures, we spend a year in advance doing our homework. This was designed and put out to bid in a week. So we didn't get to cross all the I's, dot all the T's.
Yeah, I'm not concerned with the process and how we did it. I'm concerned that we just don't allow a contractor to come in at a lower bid knowing he can add to it later.
No.
Understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Absolutely. And as these things can't come up, Mike and I are out there quite a bit.
Yeah.
And we have discussions with the contractor constantly. So we actually negotiate these things as we go as well.
I got no doubt in you guys... work ethic and skill set. So.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Anyone from the public wish to be heard on this that hasn't? This might be your second.
My name is Ralph Lightfoot. This particular project, are we absolutely certain that this will be the fix? This thing has been going on and on ever since I've been living here. So have we done our due diligence and we absolutely know that this will be a fix and we won't have to revisit this 2 years from now? Okay.
We'll get you an answer, sir. Anyone else from the public wish to speak on this? Mr.
Lewis McCarthy. Look, I think it would be beneficial for people to see the pictures of before and after, because I happen to know something about that particular project where they
was going to put it here, it was over here, and then they had to move up and away from all of those constructions that were on top of each other. And this is not on top of each other. And then they had to bring in pilings that were taller and larger and put in more concrete and everything. So I think it would be beneficial for people who doubt a project like this. I'm telling you, I watched it. Thank you.
Thank you, Lewis. On the other hand, anytime you spend $500,000 on something, it's always good to have some public discussion with it.
And reassurance.
All right. I guess we're ready for a motion.
Are they looking for
on pictures? Agenda yeah, item
show
number
us
nine?
Some light. They're going to show us some.
This is
pictures.
The day that the weir failed. And this is the approximate location across from Mother Seton Church. Failed on April 8th, 2015. We had out to bid less than a week later. This is starting some of the demolition. Some of the stuff we found underground. Big hole we dug. The upstream side, we had to dewater several times over a period of 2 weeks to firm up the soil.
Chair.
May I? Please do.
And it should be noted, this added cost, right? Because the engineer said we should follow a different process to dewater, let it rewater to pack itself, dewater, let it rewater to pack itself, right? So this was not anticipated.
Right.
Plus the length of the sheet pile itself, the engineer changed along the way because of the what you found underneath and how it was constructed previously.
Yes, sir. This project started as a rehabilitation project and rapidly turned into a replacement project where we had to go back down to good earth and firm up what we couldn't get good to make it good so that we could assure ourselves that this weir would remain. This weir is about 10 feet deeper than the previous weir. It's about 10 feet wider. It's heavier with a 1 foot thick concrete cap on top of it. So I don't anticipate it going anywhere anytime soon. This is a tent structure like this that we've had a hand in designing and constructing, and we've not had a failure yet. The engineer recommended we put more riprap downstream to ease any erosion problems and to support the downstream
riprap,
walls.
You're talking about the big rocks.
Yes, sir. Of course, we had a lot of dirt to remove. Almost lost that little fellow there.
I was there that day.
The enhanced benefits is we have, instead of a single wall, we have two walls. Structure is built twice as deep. It's four times thicker. The wing walls were extended above the high water level to the top of bank. Riprap downstream serves as an early indicator of any problems that might arise. Structure is built much stronger. Pipe and gator support on both sides is over 2 feet of concrete. The weir gate itself is a remote control. I can control it with my cell phone. We have a 24/7 monitoring at upstream water levels, and we have a 24/7 automatic rain gauge so we can monitor rain events. PA1 rehabilitation 2006. The contract price is $487,000. They had a final change order of $72,000. Which brought the final price to $560,000. These are only the construction costs for this project. This doesn't count any engineering design fees or anything that was done previous to the day they started turning dirt. And I have to point out that before the ink even dried on the check, this weir failed and had to be redone, not at city expense, but the engineer's expense. So I would say that this particular structure probably is in the neighborhood of $1 million, all said and done. The structure we just completed, the contract price is $375. We had a 10% contingency, which we rapidly went through, $37,332.50. We have a final payment for a change order for the contractor and a few other items that we overlooked in our haste to get the project out for bid, for a final payment price of $104,342.44, bringing the final price to $514,999.94. This is the final cost for this project. The replacement was a concept design in-house by myself and Don, and we went from concept on April 8th to substantially completed in August 2015, which includes the bidding time, all the paperwork time, and the construction time. They started constructing this product on May 20th, so we did it in June and July, essentially. Funding source, original budget for this project is $410,657. Per city council policy, a disaster reserve fund may be applied toward infrastructure failures. Therefore, staff recommends that the remaining balance for this project be paid from the disaster reserve fund. If there are savings from the fiscal year 2016 stormwater budget, those funds will be used to replenish the disaster reserve fund. And this is the final product after a recent rainstorm.
So I think, Mr. Lightfoot, we can say we took our best shot.
Okay. All right, then, if that concludes the presentation, I'll move approval of agenda item number 9, a resolution approving additional expenses related to the PA-1 replacement project.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. This brings us to the public participation part of our meeting. Thank you, gentlemen. Any speaker can speak on any topic up to 3 minutes, and we will advise you when your 3 minutes are up. Please approach the podium, give us your name, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is John Brady, and I'm here to support a charter review. This does not necessarily mean changing the way we govern. It means reviewing the charter. You should know that the Republicans and the Democrats in this city, the leadership, may differ on everything else, but on this item, they're in total agreement. In fact, a survey completed by Mr. Lightfoot determined that 83% of the Democrats that report to Ralph are in favor of a charter review. Also, I've heard in this council discussion that some of the language in the charter is inconsistent with Florida statute. That would be the only reason needed for a charter review. There are other reasons, in my opinion. The mayor has been quoted as saying, if it's not broken, why fix it? I present to you the fact that it must be broken. This is supposed to be a representative government. A ballot initiative asked about moving City Hall. It was rejected. And yet, the council voted 5-0 to approve building a new City Hall. That's not representative. The city also has heard from its citizens a dislike for red light cameras. And yet, when that matter was under review by the courts, this council approved an extension of 7 years. 7-year contract extension. Unbelievable. And is if true as reported, in that contract, the opt-out clause was taken out. This is unbelievable. It is not how a representative government should work. And therefore, I recommend a complete review of the city charter. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
He won't be more than 3 minutes.
Yeah, John Erpelding, our section. I'm in here for the same reason the other guy was. I'm in support of a new city charter review. I'd like to go a little bit further and say, after the city charter review, what we need is also a city code in review. But I've been up here, and I've kind of give up you I come to here and tell you people or show you something, and you just kind of ignore it and go on. Like this fellow talking about the red light cameras. We've ranted and raved about the red light cameras. We've been promised that they were, you know, people would fight the red light cameras. It never happened. The one main thing on the city charter is, I brought it up before, and I'll bring it up again. The city charter has a contract limitations of the city council is 36 months. How in the heck did y'all get away with building a new city council, signing a 7 or 10 year contract with the red light company when those are in black and white, in directly against the city charter? Anybody, and I've read the city charter to you where it says that. That's, you're in violation. You're against the law. You're going to all be thrown in jail, as far as I'm concerned, because you just ignore the city charter. You ignore the citizens. You ignore the will of the people. You just do what the hell you want to do. Thanks.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Sound like I'm beating a dead horse, I guess. But my name is Ralph Lightfoot again, and I want to talk about this review as well. I don't see why it's such a difficult thing to want to do a review. I don't understand that. When I was with a Fortune 500 company, we used to review, every year was mandatory, that we review our objective and our mission. That was done every year, okay? I don't know how you can improve yourself if you don't look at, you know, what you are governed by. Now, the reason that I really want to review is because the way, now don't get me wrong, I think City Hall is a great thing, and I think we should have a new City Hall, but I do not agree with the way it was done. I think it was most of the council people here, you guys didn't vote on this. It was done before you got here, I guess. But to have a referendum state that should the citizens okay a bond issue to build City Hall, the people vote that down, and then to have the management of the city come back and say, okay, they voted that down, how can we build a city hall without getting the okay of the people? And somehow, you know, you guys figured that out and got City Hall built. We're still using taxpayer money. I think that the only thing that should be able to overturn a referendum is another referendum, okay, not to be able to go back and circumvent the original referendum. Thanks.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. You know, for all these people who come up and they want a charter revision and a charter this and a charter that, ask them whether they ever bother to even read the damn charter. Ask them. Also, you know, I had a wise grandmother who used to say to me often enough, follow the money. She used to say that all the time. And incidentally, if you would have read the charter, you know how come the new City Hall, which is gorgeous out there, really doing a hell of a good job out there, is coming under a certain amount of money. In the charter, it says if you go over a certain amount of money, you have to have a referendum. But if you bother to read the charter, you would know it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Two quick things. One is I'm Mike Cocciola, and on the issue of the city charter. I don't have any philosophical problems with reviewing a city charter. I do have a problem with reviewing the city charter in an effort to politicize our city. So I think we need to be real careful with that. That what is the agenda of reviewing the city charter? We have a damn good city here. It's doing a fine job. And I, for one, would be really frightened of a small group of people wanting to politicize our city through that charter review. That's one. Second thing is real simple. I heard a rumor, probably a crazy rumor, but going around, that says that the Holland Park repair, whatever, you know, is out of money. Is that?
Is what?
Out of money. The city, that's the rumor that's going around, that the city ran out of money on Holland Park. So could you put that to bed? I don't know where it's coming from, but that's what's rattling around the highways and streets of City of Palm Coast. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
Vincent Liguori, Palm Coast. My subject tonight is the charter, qualification for election. There are two options, cards, a very hard process. People are reticent to giving personal data. The second option, pay 10% of current council salary, $9,600 or $960. The second option gives great latitude to cities. For example, Deltona, population 80,000, council salary $8,900. Option two, 3% of salary or $267. Ormond Beach, population 40,000, council salary 11,000. Option two, 1% of salary or $110. Port Orange, population 57,000, council salary 13,600. Option two, solely 50 cards. The question is, why does this council refuse to amend the second option, which is obviously out of line with sister cities? Current requirements for option two subdues the democratic process instead of enhancing it. This could be construed as an elitist position. People who can afford $960 would make a better candidate than one who can't. That's false. You must realize that failure to amend option two will suppress the number of potential candidates. I firmly believe that each council member should state their own position to the citizens of Palm Coast on this vital matter. And as to salary raises, I've talked to many city clerks, and they come up with buttes. And here's the most beautiful one. When you grant city employees a cost of living, you get it too. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker. Next speaker.
I don't want to get emotional.
I bet you're Jack Carroll.
Palm Coast. Mr. Nobile, at the workshop, you said you couldn't handle the job and your job at the same time. If you can't do that, resign. If you can't handle the problems of the city, then you shouldn't be sitting there. Because people are sitting in there have our lives at stake. You're taking our money, you're taking our privileges, you're taking everything. So if you can't handle it, get out. You often refer to the thousands of people. Oh, you can be able to. You want to talk? Go ahead.
No, you're addressing me, Jack.
All right. There was Mr. Nobile mentioned 1,000 people that want a change in the charter. If he had these 1,000 people, right, they could have signed a petition, they could have handed it to whoever gets a petition, and they could have put it on the ballot. But they seem to be like a ghost.
Yeah.
You know, I know 1,000 people, but 5 of them show up. I know 2,000 people that want a change in the charter, but only 5 show up. Now I have to ask another question. When did Mr. Nobile read the charter? Before or after he became a councilman? Now, you brought up a few things, and you talk about Mr. Nobile talks about the manager controlling the city. And I've been coming to meetings before Palm Coast was a city. I used to go to the old courthouse and go to the other meetings anyway. But anyway, I have never seen any manager
felt to say, we're going to do this, unless it had to do with the business of his job. Now, the city manager does the bidding of the city council. You want it, you ask him and you tell him. He gets his staff and they do a presentation for you. If you don't like it, you reject it. If you like it, you take it. But it's not his idea. The city manager does. We've had, I think I've gone to what, 4 or 5 city managers.
30 seconds, Jack.
And we've, then I don't want to talk anymore.
Next speaker.
I'm a little shorter. Lois DaCosta, Palm Coast. I'd like to take a step back, and that step back would include a little bit of civility as well. I think the cart is following the horse. I think if we want to talk charter, we have to be fiscally responsible. Where is the due diligence in the process of asking for a charter review? What will a facilitator, someone who shouldn't be a city employee, who might bring bias into the discussions, what will that facilitator cost? What will a legal advisor cost? Probably, and this is no disrespect to Mr. Reichman, but probably from a firm that doesn't work for the city. Because this is a big document. I've read it. My husband's read it. We've looked at it twice. We thought it was our civil responsibility to know what that charter was. Who is, or first of all, who will pick this attorney, this representative? What will that cost? Will there be costs associated with a venue for these meetings and or supplies? What supplies might be needed? There are maps. There are all, I can't tell you how many pages just to show where your districts are. If those need to be redone, somebody has to work on that. What would it cost this city to downsize from 4 districts to 2? Why not take a line right down the middle, east, west, and a mayor, north, south, and a mayor? For just 2 of you, there would be 3, 2 would be your quorum, and you'd go from there. There are possibilities, there are changes. And I would just like to talk again about money. The mayor and 4 council members right now make $51,000. I'm just saying the city manager, I'm not sure of his salary, but say 160 for $211,000. If you go to 80% of the money made by our county commissioners, a mayor and 4 council members would make $204,020. And with the city manager's money, $364,020. The change in added salaries would be an additional $153,020. Where is that money going to come from? If you know and come to these meetings, you know that's ad valorem taxes. It may not be a lot of money to you, but to me that would be a lot of money. If you cut from 5 members to 3, you would take $80,800 out of that. And you would only be going up $72,200. We need to do our due diligence, name these costs, find these costs, and then determine who is qualified to be on this committee. And as the gentleman, the striking gentleman with the white hair said, we need to know that the people who are doing this are not part of a faction or have a vested interest in a certain party, but represent everybody in the city. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Ron DaCosta, Palm Coast. I'm going to repeat some of the things that Jack said, but maybe a little different. Councilman Nobile, you quoted in the Palm Coast Observer.
Please address your comments to the chair, Mr. DaCosta.
Stating that Mr. Landon controls the city. I'd like to know what you mean by control. because if I'm not mistaken, that's what we hired him to do. He controls the city with the permission of the city council and the mayor. You also were quoted as saying that thousands and thousands of people in town believe that the focus of the town is directed by the city manager. Please explain. You also stated that you have full confidence in the city manager. Why aren't you reiterating that fact to your constituents? If you have full confidence in a city manager, you should be supporting him. Explain to your thousands of constituents that the city manager works at the pleasure of the mayor and city council, not the reverse. If you want, and the other thing, as far as the full-time job, you also stated, I believe, that the city council and the mayor of Palm Coast are part-time jobs and should remain part-time jobs. That's what I'm saying. You talk about full-time and at least 80% of what the county commission makes, that would be around $40,000 a year. Where is that money coming from? Money, you want a charter review. Where is that money coming from? You should be more specific on these questions to make it more reasonable and clear.
30 seconds, Mr. Acosta.
The only thing I can say is I know that you are very compassionate about your job. I'm very compassionate about the city of Palm Coast. I've been to most city council meetings and most county commission meetings. I've done my due diligence in reading and getting answers. And I pick up the paper and I read these articles that you have reported to the news reporter, and I just don't know where you're coming from, and I would like an explanation about it. And I am definitely against reviewing the city charter.
Sir. Next speaker. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public part of the meeting and come back to city council. The first comments had to do with City Hall and the way it was done. Mr. Landon, you want to address the difference between the referendum items and how this city council came, how this City Hall came to be?
Well, first of all, it was about 9-10 years ago that the referendum on the ballot was to issue bonds for a $20 million City Hall. And what the voters were being asked was to raise taxes, property taxes, to pay off that debt. And the actual ballot measure was, were you willing to approve the bond issue and raise taxes for the debt payment? And that wasn't approved. The major difference and why, from a financial and a business standpoint, the City Hall made a lot of good financial sense was that years later, 7-8 years later, the City Hall was being built by cash or with cash. City Council made it very clear that it would be money we had in the bank, if you will. And that we would not be raising any taxes to build the City Hall. In fact, one of the major factors in that decision is if we are paying over $250,000 a year in rent every year, that by building a City Hall that we own debt-free, you don't have the mortgage payments that people are coming out of their taxes every month, and you don't have the rent payments. And the charter does, it requires you to get voter approval if you issue debt for those type of improvements, where people are going to have to pay off the debt with their property taxes, and that was not the case with the City Hall as we have the game plan, the plan we implemented, and with the City Hall opening later this month, we'll be moving in. So that's really what the difference is, in trying to give a little background as to why the decision being made. One program was substantially different than the other.
And that's what I was looking for here. Red light cameras, I don't know what else could be said about red light cameras that hasn't already been beaten to death at the City Council. Some of the citizens thought they were good. Some of the citizens thought they weren't good. There was an attempt to go out and get enough signatures for a referendum to have them removed, and not enough signatures were received to do it, but the council did take action on that and removed all but five red light cameras, two of which are inoperable at this time. So whether or not the people have spoken on that, and I'm only speaking for myself on that because I've pretty much 50-50 in their reactions that I've gotten from citizens. For everyone that said they were a violation of my rights and should be gone, there was somebody else that said that made the city streets safer and they wanted them to stay. So it's for me personally, it was difficult to find common ground with this issue because the citizens that I talked to, and I went to lots of places, were divided. If they either loved them or they hated them, there was no middle ground on them.
Chair,
Holland Park, is Holland Park out of money, Mr. Landon?
Chair, before you move on, can I just comment
absolutely
further on that?
Absolutely, yeah. If you want
to, the speaker brought up in regards to red light cameras, the charter, the part of the charter that talks about length of contracts, and there is a 36-month length of contract, but it's for lease purchase contracts. It doesn't have anything to do with that type of a contract that was involved in the red light camera, or a maximum of $15 million. So that type of contract with the camera company didn't apply to that portion of the charter.
Thank you for pointing that out. Holland Park, tell us about how broke we are.
At first, I've heard that we ran out of money. We have no indication that we're going over budget on or over the contract amount on that project. I can tell you that the site contractor, the one doing the earthwork, was way behind. That's a subcontractor. The general contractor has basically put them on notice and brought in another local site contractor and has said, if you don't get it done, we're not going to pay you and we're going to have it go to a local contractor. I was given a briefing this morning that in its four C's is making good progress and in getting caught up. But is that impacting the contractor that wasn't doing his job? Yes. And if he's not getting paid, I think that's a good thing because he's not doing his job. So if he's saying, well, there's no money, it's because you're not getting the job done, therefore you're not getting paid. But the general contractor, I think, took the appropriate steps to bring in somebody else to help them get caught up. So we are behind, but it's not scheduled.
But the money we budgeted is in place.
It's in place, and at this point, we know we found some unexpected material, some muck and those type of things that may cause some cost increases, but we have a contingency on those for those type of things, and at this time have no reason to believe we're going to go over the contingency. So, but I do appreciate, I love hear rumors, so anytime somebody can tell me the rumors, that's always a good thing.
There was a lot of discussion about the charter from the standpoint of council salary. Now, Mr. Reisman, correct me if I'm wrong, but the council salary is, if we decided we wanted to raise or cut our pay, we do not require an amendment to the charter to do it.
That's in your code of ordinances, not in the charter.
So a charter review doesn't specifically touch on how much money we're piling up.
Right now, it would not take a charter change in order to for this council, any council, to adjust council salaries. As part of a charter review, anybody could body, not any individual, any body, could ask to submit to the voters a charter addition, charter amendment, to put into the charter some sort of process or some sort of number for a council salaries.
Concurrent but, with a charter review.
Correct.
But the, not requiring a charter review.
There's nothing in Florida law that would require salaries or some sort of process for determination of salaries to be put into a charter. Could it be in a charter? Yes. Does it have to be in a charter? Absolutely not.
And there was a lot of discussion about what the salary should be and whether or not it would attract a better class of councilmen than us. And I guess you could discuss
class,
it.
Class was not mentioned.
Well, not class, no.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cost of running for election. Again, those are opinions that it seems to me run hot and cold. You can go out like I did and knock on doors and get petitions signed, or you can pay the money of a percentage of the annual salary and get put on the ballot. I think most of the people I know collect petitions, and there's lots of different ways of doing it.
Chair.
Please.
If I can comment. I have to say that was about the only part of running for election that I enjoyed, was going door to door and gathering signatures, because a lot of the rest of it is not a lot of fun.
No, it's not. My experience was not the same. I was amazed at how many people in my district don't speak English when you knocked on the door.
So you learned a lot about the people in your district.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But after knocking on like 500 doors and standing up at the polls, I didn't see any of them come to vote.
My surprise. My surprise. My surprise from that process was how many people actually invited me in to sit at their kitchen table to discuss the matters of the city.
I'm going out with you next time.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor,
please.
Vice Mayor, may I? So, charter review it's interesting. What we're engaged in here is a debate, a little debate. So we have some people who are saying they'd like to see the salaries. Some people like not to see the salaries raised. We have people who say, so the process of these individual items only makes sense when there are conflicting reasons and conflicting thoughts that we pull together a separate and do the charter review. But I want to start with, I need to address a few things, if I may.
Please.
First, the conspiracy theorists is what I want to address first. I just don't know how a small faction, quote unquote, here in beautiful Palm Coast, would be able to take over the city. I just don't know how that would happen. I don't know how they would get the whole city to vote. It could end up somehow on the ballot that says, you know what, Stephen Nobile is now our king, and he is going to go ahead and make all decisions. Now the whole city is going to vote for that. And this just says to me two things. One, you don't have the faith in the people in your town to know what they want and how they want things run. And the second is, as I hear an individual's name come up in all this debate, and this is from experience that these gentlemen are aware of also when you get into this arena, when attacks on the issues are there, that's fine. You listen to them, you debate them. But when attacks on the individual occur, all it is a dislike for that person, and that attack on that person just hinders the advancement of the whole town for the city to do better. So for the conspiracy theorists, give it a rest. Couple of corrections for Mr. Carroll. First, I never said I could not handle the job. Never said that. Second, it does not take 1,000 people to get it on the ballot. It takes 5,600 signatures, okay? And this need for me to resign seems just like a personal direction, and that's what I'm talking about. We need to stop attacking individuals, get out of that, and start looking at what's best for the city of Palm Coast as a whole. Now, I had said last week I was going to bring up a request that we vote that the charter review get put on the following agenda. But since the mayor and Ms. Shipley are not here, I'm going to hold off on that so they can voice their opinion on that. But it is coming. It's coming to a vote. And everything I hear, it's very funny. I mean, I got to be very clear here. Everybody who talks to me about the charter, for or against, because I get the emails, I get, you know, the phone calls, and this is what I hear. Well, I don't think it's a good idea to do the charter review, and they go on and on for their reasoning, and then they say something like this. But if we do, I'd like to see set, and I go, did you just say that? And that's what I hear. Mr. Carroll himself said that. In the very first reviews, the very first discussions on the charter review, he said he was thoroughly against it. And that's good. That's his, you know, voicing his opinion, and that's great. But, and when he ended it, he said, but if we do one, I'd like to see, you know, seven council members. And I thought, well, everybody has something they think in the charter should be changed. And all I want to do, all I am trying to do, is what's proper as far as an organization is concerned. Palm Coast is a corporation. It isn't a playland. And this corporation, in order to advance, needs to reevaluate its plans. We do that every year from the council's perspective of strategy and from plans, but we also need to look above that. And that above that is the charter. And I could go on for weeks, so I'll stop.
Well, you have the floor.
I am done. No, I'm okay. That's all I have.
Sounds like we're in discussion by city council of matters not on the agenda. Mr. DiLorenzo, you have the floor.
I have nothing. Thank you.
Clean it up, will you?
I have nothing.
You have nothing. The only thing I want to bring up in this is it's when you become a member of this city council, unless you have experience in the corporate community and the business world, it's very hard to define the working relationship between the city council and the city manager. Here's my perspective, for what it's worth, because I spent 42 years in manufacturing, and I worked a lot with the boards of director and what have you. The city council is the board of directors. The board of directors own the company and run the company. The city manager is the CEO of the administration part of it. The board of directors decides what direction the company's going to go in. You know, we want to add a new product line. We want to close the plants in Michigan. So Mr. City Manager, as CEO, go out and make that happen and tell us how you're going to do it. It isn't that the city council sits down and directs Mr. Landon and micromanages what he does. We present a strategy to him that we all, five of us, agree to, and he has his marching orders, he takes his staff, and he goes out and makes it happen and reports back to us and keeps us posted on what it does. So it isn't like he's got five individual bosses that come in every day and say, okay, here, this is what you need to do today. We point out the direction. The city manager has his marching orders, and he goes with it. So that's how I see it, and that made it easier for me to work with the city manager, because early in our relationship, I could see what was taking place, and I adjusted to it. If I want answers to questions and I want facts and information, I can go to any staff head that works for Mr. Landon and say, you know, Mr. Quinn, can you explain to me where these numbers came from and how they're going to be used? And if He explains it to me, and I'm not the brightest guy in the world, so it might take him a while. But once I've got the message, if it doesn't look good to me and I think we should do something else, then I'll set up a meeting with Mr. Landon and say, you know, Mr. Landon, I'm concerned that that our fiscal direction here is not going to end up in something that's going to make our city better. And the same with any of the other, you know, if I want to talk to Richard Adams about the drinking water or you know, Nestor about public works, I can do that. So I'm comfortable with the relationship here. If you are a citizen, like when I was, before I was on the council, I came to the meetings and I listened, and it does kind of look like, well, gosh, this guy down here is calling all the shots and the rest of them are just nodding their heads. Let me tell you that when you get on this side of the table, you learn the reality of what it is to have a working relationship between the city manager and the city council, and it's not an adversarial relationship, nor is it a relationship that requires that bridges be built or anything like that. So that's my opinion. Take it for what it's worth. I guess that concludes the discussion by the city council.
Well, may I?
You may.
Thank you. I just, as you were talking, two things popped up that were questions. And one was, how do I say that the city manager, I'm fully confident with what he does, but yet, you know, want maybe a change in the structure. And that's absolutely true. See, what I think is a little different than you. And a lot of people I speak to do, is that I don't see the city manager as the CEO. I see him as the city manager. And he manages what we decide. So we say, here's the strategy, go put it together. So not the CEO, but the manager. He is probably, I know city managers from many cities around here. I know a lot of them. He's probably one of the more competent ones. That's, so I have no pride. See, everybody's trying to make this that I'm against the city manager. I'm not against the city manager. A lot of people, it's if you, you know, that's kind of the tone I heard, and it's not. It's a matter of the structure, the process. That's what the city charter is looking at, not Jim Landon, but that position. You know, that position and these five positions. So I just wanted to, you know, I heard that brought up. Yeah, you know, when I'm old, that's all I got.
Okay.
So I can't, yeah, I took my best shot.
Okay. Discussion by the city attorney of matters on the agenda. Not on the agenda, and this is always great.
Well, I'm just going to follow up on what I just heard, and that is I want to add one thing, and that is that what any local government in the state of Florida, in particular City of Palm Coast, does through its board of directors, all of the policy decisions that are made here, in a corporation, a private corporation, it's done in the, you know, on the 20th floor of a big building, or in the back room of a strip center, whatever.
In the Bahamas on a golf course.
Exactly, but here it's done right here. It's done right here, and it's done two times. It's done two times a month in the public, and by law it has to be done that way. Government in the sunshine, and so one of the wonderful things about government in Florida for its citizens is that they know exactly what the direction is. They know exactly what the policy is that's created by, and the directions that are given to the city manager or the CEO or whoever, whatever you want to call them. The city manager or CEO's requirements are set forth in the charter. So we're not making them up as we go. These are in the charter that was created by the citizens in 1999. So I just think it's important to recognize, all of you know that, but I think it's important to recognize that on top of this structure, you have this added responsibility and requirement that everything be done so that the constituents know and the taxpayers know, the shareholders, if you want to use that analogy, know exactly what's going on.
And Mr. Reichman, you represent more than just a couple of cities in Florida as their attorney. Is this a typical of what you're seeing in other cities that you go to?
Not just in Florida, but in the United States, given the complexities, the legal and financial complexities the technical complexities that, that modern governments face, the overwhelming, almost strong, high majority of local governments have a manager-council form of government, as opposed to a strong mayor, which used to be more common. It's much less common now. But the point is because of the complexities, most governments feel that it's necessary to hire someone who receives the direction of the elected officials. City manager is not elected. It's appointed by the elected officials. But that person has training and experience and job responsibilities that are set forth in the charter and arguably is in a better position to implement the policies that are dictated to him or her by the elected officials.
You see, all these, everything we're talking about should be in a forum of a charter review and not in just flippant, you know, statements. Because you're right, Mr. Eichmann, everything you said is absolutely correct. Everything that Bill said is correct. Everything that Jason said is correct. I'm not going to say mine, but the point is, okay, but let's put that in the proper context of a charter review where we may come out the other end and say, we're fine. We don't need to adjust anything, and sit back and go, okay, we're confident now. Now, I don't believe that's going to happen because, I mean, it's very simple. If you want to say, if it's not broke, don't fix it, I want to point to one thing. The last 13 years, we have done a citizen survey, and the citizen survey identified two things that was important to them. Number one and number two always was economic growth and job development. And if the 13 years, nothing has happened. It hasn't changed for 13 years. That is still the number one, number two, and rated the lowest. We are about, you know, there's 6% of the people think we're doing that well, okay? Is there something maybe in the charter that is preventing us from excelling in this growth? I don't know. But, you know, if you don't look at it, to sit back and fight this befuddles me. It just does. I mean, unless you've got the conspiracy theory that Steve Nobile is going to take over the city if we do this charter review. Other than that, it's a win-win. So...
thank you, Your Majesty.
You're welcome.
I mean,
after the review.
City Attorney, are you finished?
I'm done.
Discussion by City Manager of matters not on the agenda.
Yeah, I'm going to throw out another rumor we're hearing out there. At the golf course, city-owned golf course, Palm Harbor, there is property that we lease from Syntex that... there's surveyors out there putting survey stakes, and so it's generating a lot of conversations. So I thought I would just confirm with City Council that, yes, it is a property that's being leased by the city from Syntex. We do not know of any plans whatsoever. Ever since they have stopped the project 8 years ago, the property has always been up for sale. We've heard that there is a contract on the property. We have no way of confirming that, but we have not seen anybody come in with any proposed plans for the property. And it doesn't change our daily operations, and we don't expect anything to come from the survey at this time. But once again, you never can tell what the future holds. But
you don't start any of those rumors, do you?
Yeah. Well, I can. I'd be happy to. Don't have a clue. The other thing that is obviously very exciting is that, as I mentioned before, our first City Hall is nearing completion. Contractually, it is the completion date is October 15th. We have, at this point, no reason to believe we're going to go beyond that date. It's the finishing touches are coming together. There's always a lot of logistics to make sure that happens. But we are planning to start our move on October 19th, which is a Monday. so that we should be able to meet our plans to be totally moved in before the end of October. From a city council standpoint, meetings obviously will start to change. There will be one more meeting in this room of city council, and that is a business meeting of Tuesday, October 20th at 9 a.m. The workshop next week is going to be at city offices at City Marketplace, as usual, at 9 a.m. And then the 27th is the one that's up in the air. Not sure where that one will be held. A lot of that has to do with all this equipment in the process of move and where it can be televised and recorded. Well, that's a workshop, so it'll be recorded and the sound so people can listen to it. So we're still keeping October 27th flexible. We have the three options. It may be at the City Marketplace. It may be here in this room. We don't usually do that, but may have to move it here because of the move, or it may be at our new facility. And then the big date, if everybody can mark their calendar, is the open house, and the grand opening is November 3rd. And it will start at 4 a.m. with the ceremony at 5:15. Nope, 4 p.m. Yeah. I was trying. Boy, you should have seen some nervous people back there. 4 p.m. And with the ceremony starting at 5:15. And then that is a city council business meeting, an evening meeting. So at 6:30, you'll hold your first city council meeting in the new facility. And we're actually hoping that people will join us at the council meeting. It will be a great evening, and hope the whole community comes out. We're expecting a large crowd that evening. Exciting time.
Good.
Yep. Vice Mayor, that's all I had for tonight.
You have to tell them if they come to that inaugural, they have to come to every meeting for the meeting. You're not allowed in unless you come after that to every meeting.
I learned not to try to tell people what to do, I guess. Yeah,
thank you. The chair will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn.
After we recognize the Board of County Commissioner, the Honorable Nate McLaughlin, who is also chairman of the Tourist Development Council, please stand up and be recognized. And as George Hans would say, thank you for your service.
Now I move we adjourn.
We are adjourned.